So, good afternoon. Welcome to our ongoing meditation class. For those of you who've come to the introduction to meditation class, a series of four lessons. For those who haven't meditated before, done little meditation before, that class is being held in the room to my right, between here and the reception area. So that's for the introduction to meditation class here every Saturday afternoon. We do an ongoing class, and that class we give about 15 minutes of instructions, followed by about 45 minutes of meditation. So if you haven't meditated that long before, it might be difficult for you, which is one of the reasons why we encourage people, if they come to the introduction meditation class, the room to my right. So every time we have one of these classes, some of the problems people have with their meditation, to try and deal with those, and of course, you know, the old problem which people have a lot of difficulty with, you know, in the thinking mind, always giving a commentary, always giving a response to what's happening in this world, or in your mind, in your body. And so to have successful, lovely, peaceful meditation, it is helpful if we can just calm our mind down so that we can experience life, experience our body, experience our mind first without jumping in with a description. Because as soon as we jump in with a description of what we're experiencing, that usually proliferates into almost like writing an essay about it in our mind. You know, and because we've been doing that a lot of times, we also, if we are not satisfied, happy, bored, we have a whole filing cabinet or like a memory store of fantasies and dreams, things we like to worry about. And even when people say, oh, they have so much anxiety and worry in our modern world, still they like to have more anxiety and worry by watching TV dramas or exciting movies or going off to adventure worlds where they go bungee jumping, death drops or whatever else. That somehow that people are afraid of peace and they're used to excitement, living on the edge, the adrenaline rush, where the mind is compelled to do something rather than learning how to enjoy the peace and the delight of being peaceful. So there's many reasons why in our modern world we think too much and we see too little. And the best example of that, these are old stories, but they're some of the best, is the story of Lao Tzu, this Taoist master who would go on a walk with his disciple, one disciple every time, a new one often, into the mountains. But they had to keep the golden rule of not talking, not saying anything, had to keep silent. You know how hard it is to have silence in our modern world. It's when they say that silence is golden, it's worth much more than gold, because it's so rare. You go to airports, when I was traveling last week, you go to even just going in the car and just parking next to someone, and even though we've got our windows closed and their windows closed, you can see the car just bopping up and down. They've got some really heavy music on. It's so hard to find silence. Even in elevators, it's using music. So, silence. This monk would always, Lao Tzu, would have the golden rule, you have to keep silent on the walk with the master. So when they went on a walk in the mountains, there just happened to be that day a beautiful sunset. And the disciple, this young follower of the master Lao Tzu, said, what a beautiful sunset. He'd broken the rule. And at that, the master turned around. If the master had said back, you've broken the rule, stupid young disciple, then Lao Tzu would be a hypocrite. He broke his own rule. He just turned around silently, walked back to the monastery, and then scolded the disciple. Said he can't go on a walk ever again with the master. He broke the rule. And the reason I tell this story is what came next. When the disciple's friend said, give him a break, cut him some slack. They never actually said that because this was in China about 800 years ago, but the sort of thing. Leave him alone. What's wrong? Forgive him. It's only one mistake. That is when the meditation master said, when my student said, what a beautiful sunset, he wasn't watching the sunset anymore. He was only watching the words. He wasn't watching the sunset. He was watching the description of the sunset, the words. And that is the difference between thoughts and reality. So if you really want to understand this world, your body and its mind, you've got to see the raw thing on top of which thoughts are built. To really go back to the heart of things, the raw experience. If you want to enjoy a sunset, you go up there and say, what a beautiful sunset, and you miss it. You have to learn how just to be still, be peaceful, and just know it, instead of trying to take notes and describe it to yourself. So because of that, the silence is essential to deepening the meditation, and also to getting this wonderful sense of relaxation and peace. So, how can we sort of change our habits and learn how to enjoy some silence? First of all, to not be afraid of it, to value it, to make sure that you regard silence as even more important than the thoughts and the words over which people argue and fight over, and who's right and who's wrong. There are no arguments in silence. So, put value on silence. How do we put value on silence? First of all, we have to recognize what silence is. It's so rare in this world to find peace. So, once everybody is sitting down, I'm going to just give a little exercise about silence. But because some more people have come in the last 5 minutes, I have to repeat the usual thing. Anyone who's here for the introduction to meditation class, that is in the room to my right. So in a few minutes we're going to start meditating for a longer time. So anyway, so for the learning how to be silent, if I'd ask everybody just to please close your eyes, it's only for 1 minute, it's not meditation, it's just I want you to listen to my voice with your eyes closed. I'm going to demonstrate silence for you, what it means. But I also need you to pay attention to the reaction to my words inside your own mind. Because as I am speaking, you will begin to notice some pauses between my words. In those spaces between my words, what was going on in your mind? You find that if you are attending closely enough, in those pauses, you were aware, but with no thoughts going on in your head. You weren't giving things names. You didn't start an inner conversation. There it is again. The silence between the thoughts. Please open your eyes again now. So, what we're demonstrating here is, number one, it is possible to be silent. You understand what it is. And it's pretty cool, very attractive, very restful. So why is it we can't go there too often? First of all, that when we start meditating, that we are too agitated. our mind, using the old simile, a mind being like a lake, a body of water. On that lake, there are many waves. Those waves represent your thoughts. So how can we stop those waves on the lake? And if you try and put your hand in there to smooth the crests of the waves down, you just make more waves. The waves are there because there's something agitating. If you can just leave it alone, let it be, don't interfere. If you protect that water from any disturbance, the wind or ducks or whatever else, you will find that the water gets calm and peaceful all by itself. The friction, the dissipation of the energy eventually calms down the lake and it becomes waveless, still. That is like your mind. Unfortunately, we never give our mind that much time to actually to get peaceful. We always, when we have a little bit of peace, we think that that's a gap, a space to be filled up. It is just like even this room over here. We try very hard not to put things in here, not to put pictures on the walls, not to think, oh, a pot plant would be good in that corner. We try to keep it simple because the nature of the human beings is not to like space or emptiness. Always put something there. So you're nice and peaceful, and you go and disturb it by putting a pot plant in your mind, metaphorically speaking. You have these beautiful mountains, and as soon as someone reaches the top, what do? Put a flag on the top. And after a couple of flags, then they have a restaurant. And why can't they leave things alone? And why can't we leave our mind alone? The two go together. It is the fact that we always want to put something in where it doesn't belong. A thought where silence is more than satisfying. So, after a while we leave our mind, we don't interfere with it, and we find it does become peaceful. One of the tricks which we do here to get you into such peace, we start with what we call the body awareness. Now the body awareness, mindfulness of the body with some kindness, is really helpful because the body sometimes gets sick, the body sometimes hurts, and the body is just sometimes so demanding that looking at the body and learning how to calm it down is something which you can all know is very helpful and very useful. It's so even vital for people. Many people sometimes come to learn meditation because their body's got cancer, it's got this disease or that disease, and it works. But it's also knowing the importance of having a peaceful body focuses you on the body for quite a time. And there's one thing about bodily feelings is that they exist only in the present moment. And many of those feelings you can't really say much about. With one of the reasons why you go and see a doctor, what's wrong with me, doctor? Well, it hurts. Yeah, it doesn't say very much. But you ask about the politics, or the football, or the economy, and then you say so much. But your own body, in which you live, now to give a description, to understand it, we don't even spend time making the words up for it. That is helpful in this situation, because it means you can be aware of the feelings in your leg. How do they feel? You know, but you can't really give it a name. And because you can't give it a name, you don't go proliferating into a conversation about it. And before you get bored, I'll move you up the body to somewhere else, up the body, all the time, just giving you awareness of the body in this moment where you can't have much of a commentary. This is actually calming the thinking mind down. And when it gets into the mind, the body's nice and relaxed, you're getting used to silence as being aware of reality rather than, you know, your description of reality with the thoughts. And then after a while you find that you can go into your what we call the peaceometer, and the peaceometer just sees just how peaceful your lake is, how peaceful your mind is. As you look at that, the peace, hopefully by this time, is enough peace and quietness in the mind, it starts to feel good. You know, it's a delightful feeling to be peaceful. Leading you into this peace gently, slowly, methodically. And by the time you get to the peace summit, you can see just what makes the mind more peaceful, makes it less peaceful. And you find out it's just mostly all your unfounded worries about the future and all your useless digging up the past. I say it's useless because it is. Number one, what you think happened in the past, you've already filtered it, it's already been distorted by your commitment to your agenda rather than the commitment to truth. Unfortunately, there's a lot of, but that's a Friday night talk session, not a sort of a Saturday afternoon meditation. But it's a lot of truth. We see things as we want to see, what fulfills. Just ask Mr. Trump, and just, you know, here's the best meeting ever, or the biggest inauguration ever, the best deal ever. It just, that's the agenda, and you see things, you know, in that light. So, when you are just in the peaceometer, it becomes very still. You're not making judgments, you just are. And little by little, you feel that peace, and it feels really good. So as you feel really good in the peace, in the present moment, the past, forget about it, the future, and then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, as the old saying goes, grab this moment, be in this moment, and there's nothing much to say about now. Most of the thoughts, most of the worries, most of the bad memories, past, future, present is free. So when you get into the present moment, it's hardly any thoughts can be done. Most of the thoughts are descriptions of what happened a few moments ago, or the fears of what's going to happen next, or because of boredom, you just go to those places or go to fantasy world just because there's nothing else to do. There's nothing else to do. I prefer doing the nothing than something else. When you prefer this peace and silence, then the silence, the peace, stabilize. If you feel uncomfortable there because you're not used to silence, of course you'll start to disturb it because it challenges you. So after a little while you get used to the silence. You prefer the silence and you delight in the thoughtless mind, aware, still. Once you start that, then the meditation just takes off. You've calmed the mind down. The waves on the surface of the lake are just tiny little ripples, if anything at all. And just as people do when they see a lake which is like a glass mirror, they delight in it. It's a beautiful sight. The waves on a windy day, they're just quite disturbing for people. Somehow or another, that we do actually like stillness whenever we meet it. But unfortunately, we very rarely meet it in our own mind. So maybe today we can value the stillness where the thoughts stop. If you try to stop the thoughts, that's more thinking about the thoughts. That's what a beautiful sunset. I'm thinking a lot. This is a good thought. I'm silent. That's disturbing everything. Little by little we use skillful means. It's not done through willpower. It's done through wisdom, power, and practice to be instead of to do. Okay, so there's an introduction. Again, anyone who has come for the first time, that might not be so relevant and too much for you. So if you wish to go to the introduction class next door, it's great. But those of you who are coming here for the full session, if you'd like to get yourself in a nice meditation position, and then once you're in the position, I will lead the meditation for the first 15 minutes or so, then I'll just be quiet, and then you'll hear me speaking again just before the meditation time is complete. And there'll be opportunities for questions and answers afterwards. So if you close your eyes, it's taking a lot of visual distractions away from your mind, so you can be more aware of both my voice, but also, more importantly, the feelings in your own body. In particular, your posture. How are you sitting now? Now, this is not sort of a training camp to force you into one particular way of sitting. With your eyes closed, you can feel your way into truth. What's most comfortable for you? What is the best posture for you today? And how are your legs? Just as a general question before to get yourself in a decent posture. Now we are going to refine it. So when you ask a question, how are my legs now, including my feet? When you ask a question, you also direct your mindfulness to that part of the body. In other words, you become aware of your legs and your feet, how they feel. And once you're aware of them, fully aware, then you can ask, can I improve you? Are you comfortable enough? And if you need to adjust them, please do so, as I'm doing to my legs. When you adjust them, you ask them again, is this okay, or is it want some more adjustments? So the fidgeting you do at the beginning. Fidget well at the beginning, and then you're comfortable for the rest of the meditation. So once your legs, you feel they're in the best position, then you move up the body to your butt. How is it? On the stool, the cushion, the chair. Do you need to move it forward or backwards? Do you need to make sure there's no folds of clothing pressing into your butt? You're going to be able to maintain this posture for another 40 minutes or so. Make sure it's good at the beginning. Once your butt is comfortable, then you ask your back, how are you? Which means your awareness goes to that area of your body where in many people can experience aches and pains a lot of time because they're not aware enough of their posture. So try a few different things. Try stretching the back, relaxing it. If you're on a chair, moving it back against the backrest, moving it forward. Find out what's the best position for your back, by which I mean the mindfulness giving you feedback and the kindness, the care, meaning you find the best position just for you. Once you feel that your back is comfortable and sustainable in this position, then ask your hands how they are. Where have you put them? And do they feel comfortable there? You've got awareness just in that small part of your body, your hands and wrists, fingers, until they feel at ease, comfortable. And then you can move up to your shoulders. It's another area of tension. How do your shoulders feel? Be aware of the sensations, the feelings, the tightness, the looseness. Once you have the awareness there, you're looking at the right place. Then you can learn by trial and error just how to loosen those muscles. I just usually imagine a bunch of strings on either side of the spine, pulled on each end. And imagine those bunch of strings on either side of the spine. Let go on both ends. It's helpful, a little visualization connected to that part of the body. And my muscles do relax. They do get loose. So the tightness is not there. To my neck. First of all, making sure that the head is properly balanced, and also being aware of the throat. I too have irritations, mostly because of allergies. And just look inside the throat, feel it, the itchy sensation. When I could be aware of it as fully as possible, then you learn from, again, trial and error, and the feedback, noticing how you react to irritations. You can soothe them. You imagine the irritation getting less. And you can be aware it is getting less. The mind does have an effect on the body. And once you've soothed your own throat, move up to your head. The nose, the sinuses, the forehead, around the eyes, around the mouth. Feel those muscles. Just can't give them a name. Once you can feel those sensations, that tightness, that irritation, whatever it is, see what you need to do to relax those muscles, to soothe that irritation. Just a way that if you want to, you can screw your eyes up. You can also loosen those muscles too. Just something you learn to do at will. Until the face feels open and free and loose and comfortable. Just like the whole of your body, as you're aware of this body from the feet to the head. You paid attention to it, each part of it, you've cared for it. The body responds by relaxing. And you may not be totally relaxed, but you can feel that it's much more relaxed than when you began. That feeling is delightful. So I encourage you to recognize the feeling of delight when the body gets a little bit more peaceful. Because once you delight in relaxation, you'll discover relaxation goes deeper. The body wants more, and so just muscles loosen up which weren't loosened before. You're feeling, you're aware, and it's delightful. A relaxed body. If there's something inside your body which is still irritating you, then focus on that. Zoom in on it. Another word for focusing. And once you're really inside that feeling, that pain, that imbalance, then just see what you can do to relax that feeling, to ease it. If you're worried about the past and the future, it gets tense. So be careful, be in this moment, how it feels now. And then have this beautiful kindness. It's opening the door of your heart to this moment, unconditionally, no strings attached. Just want to learn from you, tension, pain. Learn what makes you worse, learn what makes you more relaxed. And you usually find, with a bit of training, you can relax almost any feeling in the body, bringing yourself to a very good state of health. So delighting in the relaxation and peace of your own body. At the same time, I've drawn you into the present moment, learning how to listen to your body rather than talk back at life. Awareness, silence, not talk back, not think back, just knowing. Now we could look at our peaceometer. How peaceful are you? How agitated? Usually ask people number from 1 to 10. 1 peaceful, 10 very agitated. Where are you on that scale right now? Looking at your peaceometer. Now, what causes the needle of the peaceometer to go down? What causes it to rise? Here we're learning how to calm our own minds down. What makes it agitated? What makes your own mind more peaceful, more still? vibrant, your mind is reasonably peaceful. Because it hasn't got that much to focus on, which means it's liable to just wander off. See if you can focus now on your breathing. Are you breathing in or are you breathing out right now? Not interfering or controlling your breathing, but just, as it were, holding its hand, being a friend to your own breath. Where it goes, you go. If you like, you can imagine that you breathing in peace, health, freedom, any positive quality. Imagine it, visualize it so you know what you're doing. And breathe it in with every in-breath. And as you breathe out, any negative qualities, any tiredness, any sickness, breathe it out with every out-breath. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Hopefully you're reasonably silent now. Reasonably relaxed and at peace. Now, carry on. I will be silent. close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? We're doing the gong 3 times to end the meditation. So, have we got some questions from overseas, first of all? Very good. Okay, so over here, from US and from Germany. How can I find the stillness when I am alone and not listening to PSWA guided meditation? After a while, the training there is just like when you are training with a coach playing tennis. Until the sort of you don't need the PSWA guided meditation or any other guided meditation, the training has done its job. It just rewires the brain. It trains you so it becomes automatic, so that you can just know exactly what to do because you've been doing it for a long time. It's called training. And so, with the guided meditation, again, you may be alone, but those guided meditation can be freely downloaded onto all these wonderful little machines, your iPhones. And then you can play it at any time, in any place. So you don't need just to listen just on a Saturday afternoon or a Friday evening. Any time you want, you can find your favorite meditation instructions and then just, it's there for you. But in the end, you don't rely just upon the meditation instructions after a while. We hope that it becomes so well known, so just, part of, you know, how you do things, that you can just go off by yourself. Like any trainer, any coach, any instructor, like a driving instructor, after you've been trained, off you go. You will make mistakes, but soon you'll learn exactly what to do. And then you can find a stillness. But the most important thing is that when you have even a little bit of stillness, you recognize it, you cherish it, you value it. Sometimes you say that, you know, if you won some sort of prize, you had sort of $2,000 in your pocket or in your bag, you will never leave your bag lying around because there's something valuable in it. But if you have silence, people just don't value it and they sort of drop it and they leave it alone and they lose it. So please value sort of the silence. Do you have any advice for me when I jolt from pain or sudden memory or panic? You jolt and it's gone. You let it go. So sometimes you have a movement or someone slams the door or there may be just a bolt of lightning outside, but you don't allow it to reverberate inside of you. This is one of the parts about being resilient. If a person is tense and tight, like the tight string, just a small sound, and or something hits that string which is stretched under strain, and you hear a long resounding echo, but a high-pitched sound. But if that string is loose on both ends, something hits it and then it hardly makes a noise. So this is when you have a jolt from pain or sudden memory or panic. When you're resilient, you're not tight, it just disappears pretty quickly. So you don't try to get rid of it, that just makes it worse. You just relax. It's in this moment. If it's a sudden jolt, sudden means it suddenly comes, suddenly goes. So when it goes, it's gone. So don't go thinking about it and memorizing it and worrying about it. It's past, it's gone. We get that wonderful skill. When something happens and it's gone. There's a simile which I mentioned in my first meditation booklet. It's imagine you're a host at a party, a fancy party, and you're standing at the entrance to your house or to the ballroom or wherever it is, meeting your host, and you greet everyone. Thank you for coming. If you spend too much time greeting one person, then you miss the other people who go past you. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. So you meet a guest, you are calm, polite to them, and then you let them go. You meet the next guest, polite, let them go. But you don't keep holding on to one guest. In your mind, you have a whole series of guests coming into your mind in a 45-minute meditation. Many things come in. You recognize them, you let them go. The pain, the bliss, boredom, let it come in, but don't keep it. There's another guest coming in right behind. So if you hold on to one guest, you find that you just ignore the other guest, and that's where the problem comes. So it's wonderful living in the moment. Series of experiences like guests which come into your mind. You welcome everyone, but you also let them go too. You don't linger, attach, and grasp any of them. Okay, that's from the people overseas. Any questions from those here about the meditation today? Yes.
In one of your books, the Art of Disappearing, you mentioned the gatekeeper. Now, is the gatekeeper actually the mindfulness, or it is a byproduct of mindfulness?
It is a byproduct of mindfulness. The gatekeeper is just, you know, which allows good thoughts to come in, or rather good experiences to come in. And then you're just almost setting up a system like an antivirus software in your brain. So, you know, if you start to feel sleepy, you know, you don't go down the path too far down the path of sleepiness. An example of that, which is, I mentioned this when I was teaching a retreat over in Bangkok last week. There was one of the monks who was a friend. Actually all friends. He came here many years ago. His name was Ananda. He was a US Marine who got shot in the back of the head in Vietnam. And he was a wonderful fellow afterwards. He won't mind me saying this, it knocked some sense into him. But, you know, he was really close to being dead. But he survived. But he had, because of the wound in the back of his head, he had epileptic fits. And he told me just how he used mindfulness and a gatekeeper to be able to overcome those epileptic fits. He used his mindfulness, you know, he had the fit, and he just could see what was happening. And he sort of caught it earlier and earlier and earlier. And said, if I carry on this way, it's going to be a fit. And it was a bit too late for him, he had the fit. But he kept on training, being aware and aware, until it got to the point that he could catch it very early. He could see his mind or his body tensing up. He could see the warning signs. And he had the strategies to avoid the epileptic fit. So by catching it early and early, if I carry on, I'm going to have that fit. He caught it earlier and earlier and earlier. And when he caught it earlier, he gave him other options, other doors to go through with his mind. Usually it was a case of just going into a dark room and resting, meditating. And then he would actually not have the fit. And that's how he told me, just he overcame those fits. Unfortunately, later on, because of the wound, he did develop a brain tumor and died. But that was this wonderful little example which he had of how you can catch things earlier. Now, catching things earlier is like, you know, getting a gatekeeper. In other words, which notices, if I keep going on this direction, it's going to sort of cause problems. Even sleepiness. Sometimes I say, let sleepiness happen. But, you know, those, if you catch it earlier and earlier and earlier, you know, you can actually see it coming. You can take another path. It's a fork in the road. And after a while, because you're aware, you've been there before, you know, if I keep going on that direction, that's where it's going to lead. But, you know, catch it earlier and earlier, I can go in another direction. The other simile which I used for that was, you know, a simile of the snake. Now, that was a simile which I developed when I was living in the jungles in Thailand, where there are many snakes around. But the problem was, it was a jungle. It was nighttime often. I didn't have any shoes on. There were no protective shoes. Often you'd have thongs, and those thongs wore out. So you were walking there barefoot at night time, and even the flashlights, we didn't have any batteries. I mean, it's not exaggeration. I mean, it really was quite sort of simple. And so what you had to do was, you know, whatever light of the moon or the stars, use that. And every time I saw a shadow across the path, I'd be on the lookout for it. It could be a snake, it could be just a twig, but I'd always jump over it or go another path in case that was a snake. Because I was aware of the danger of snakes, and because I was aware that, you know, it could be it could be there on the path, I was really aware of them. I set up my mindfulness, look out for snakes. That's called setting up a gatekeeper. It's called instructing your mindfulness. There may be a problem you have in the meditation. You put that program in the very beginning. If I see that sign coming of an epileptic fit, I can see it. This is important. So you catch it early. You've got your gatekeeper there. You see it coming, other direction. You see sometimes in a deeper meditation where you get excited. Something is at last happening, you get overexcited and, oh my goodness, you've blown a nice deep meditation. So what you do is you set up, I will not get excited when I get to that stage of meditation where things start to happen. I will go, yes, yes, ooh, and it all sort of falls apart. That's your snake. So only tell your don't give your gatekeeper too many instructions. Otherwise your poor gatekeeper will not know which to look out for. So just use your one or two instructions. Please look out for this thief on the prowl who keeps stealing my tranquility, my peace, called excitement. And then when you look out for that, you see it coming, you catch it early, and then you can go another path. Does that make sense, sir? Sometimes the only way to describe these mental experiences, especially in meditation, is try and use similes, whatever you can get from real life. And it's they can be quite helpful. But don't set up the gatekeeper with the machine gun. Otherwise, that's just really, really sort of too aggressive. It's just got to be a wise gatekeeper. Any other questions or comments? Okay, it's 4:15, so we call it a day here, and then we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then whatever you need to do, you can do later on. Oh, and just to let people know that there is a sutta class tomorrow at 3 p.m., and it's the last part of the Potapada Sutta. the Muay Thai. Very good. Over there.